Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud-Kat Amud Bet. The Gemara asks, Amar Rava Barad Amar Rav Yitzchak, Bikurim Meimatai Mechayvin Alehen. At what point in time is there a chiyuv for Bikurim? What is true by other matanot is that there is a threshold by which one becomes chayav in those matanot. We know by Trumot and Masrot that Miruach HaKri is the threshold by which a person then becomes chayav to give those matanot. And he can no longer do certain things because of that threshold. The question by Bikurim is much harder because where along that line do Bikurim become Chayav? And that's what the Gemara is asking over here. At what point do you become Chayav in Bikurim? When do they take on a Shein Bikurim? What is that threshold? Rashi says for the note that they become Truma. And once they become Truma, then there's a Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shamayim for a Zar that eats them. So that's what the Gemara is after, that threshold. The Balei Tosafot, on the other hand, on the previous Amud, mentioned the fact that it's also then a mitzvah on the Kohanim not to eat them chutz l'choma. So either one of those issues, they both are triggered at the same moment, which is once they become Bikurim, they must be eaten in Yerushalayim, not outside of Yerushalayim by the Kohanim. And number two is it can only be eaten by a Kohen, not by a Zar. It takes on a Shein Truma, and that Shein Truma makes a Chiyuv B'dei Shamayim for someone who is a Zar. So where is that threshold? Mishiru pnei abayit. Once they see the Beit HaMikdash, that's what it seems to mean from Balei HaTosafot, from Rashi, that Mishiru pnei abayit is once they've either entered the Azara or they're within the realm of the Azara. You should just know that the Rambam paskins that it is Mishiru pnei achuma. It's when they see the walls of Yerushalayim. That is because we'll see that there is a correlation between Bikurim and Maaser Sheni. And by Maaser Sheni, it's clear that the walls of Yerushalayim are the significant threshold for Maaser Sheni. So the Rambam says that it's Mishiru Pnei Achuma. At the end of today's daf, we're going to speak about Maaser Sheni. And over there, there's a girsa change based on the Balei HaTosafot as to whether it's Mishiru Pnei Abayit or Shemishiru Pnei Achuma, possibly connected to the Rambam Shita, that the Beit HaMikdash does not only influence the Mikdash itself, but all of Yerushalayim. The Rambam and the Perush HaMishnayot, both in Rosh Hashanah and in Sukkah, with regards to certain halachot that only apply what seemingly is in the Mikdash, the Rambam says applies to all of Yerushalayim, because Mikdash is synonymous with Yerushalayim. So for the Rambam, Mishru Pnei Abayit is the same thing as going through Chumat Yerushalayim. And so, Balei Tosafot Rashi seem to indicate it's Mishru Pnei Abayit literally means getting to the Mikdash, where the major processing of the Bikurim takes place, meaning that everything that's done with the Bikurim is done in the Mikdash, whereas the Rambam says it's Mishiru Pnei Achuma. Come on, who is that like? Ki HaTana. That is like this Tana, the Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Bikurim, Miksatan B'chutz, O Miksatan B'fnim. If a portion of them have crossed over the threshold, again, it's not clear whether the threshold is the Azara, the wall of the Azara, or the wall of Yerushalayim. But if a portion of them are inside the wall, a portion of them outside of the wall, shibechutz arei kechulin l'chol dibrehen, anything that's outside that threshold remain chulin, shibifnim, anything that has entered arei hen kehekdesh l'chol dibrehem, they are kadosh bekidushat bikurim for all matters. So you see here that there is this threshold, and seemingly the threshold of bifnim and bechutz is indicative that there is a wall or a threshold that you have to cross. And again, that either be the Azara or Chumat Yerushalayim. Amar Rav Sheshet, Bikurim Hanacha Me'akevet Behem, Kriya Ein Me'akevet Behem. So Rav Sheshet makes a statement that we've actually seen before in yesterday's daf. We saw it attributed either to Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Ochaya or to Rabbi Asi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, which is that with regards to Bikurim Hanacha, placement of them next to the Mizbeach, touching the corner of the Mizbeach, is Me'akev, which means that if you don't do it, then you cannot eat the Bikurim, or the Kohanim are not permitted to eat the Bikurim. But Kriya, Mikra Bikurim, Parshat Bikurim, which is found in Parshat Kitavo, that is not Me'akev. Even if you don't do it, you're allowed to eat from the Perot. That's against our Mishnah, where we said it was authored by Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva, who say that you'll get Malkot if you eat Bikurim before Mikra Bikurim. So Kohen who eats it before Mikra Bikurim, according to our Mishnah, gets Malkot. We said that that was Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Akiva Stimta. The Rabbonon disagree, and Rabbi Sheshet is paskening like that view of the Rabbonon, that the Kriyat Mikra Bikurim is not Me'akev. Come on. Who's this like? Yai Tano? It's like this Tano. The Tanya Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shloshat Varim Mishum Shloshat Zkenim. He says over three things from three different zakenim. We're only going to get one of the three, the one of the three that's relevant to us, which is Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yachol Yale Adam Maser Sheni Bizman Hazeh B'Yerushalayim. You would think that a person would take up Maser Sheni to Yerushalayim Bizman Hazeh. Bizman Hazeh means post Churban HaBayit. V'yochlenu, and then he can eat it there. V'dinu, and it makes sense. B'chor, Taon Havat Makom, U'Maser Sheni Taon Havat Makom. When it comes to Bechor, Bechor is something that is given to the Kohen. If it is a Tam, if the animal that is a Bechor does not have a mum in it, then there's a requirement for the Kohen to bring it up to Yerushalayim, put it on the Mizbeach, and then he gets to eat those things that are not given to the Mizbeach. They are the Balim of the Bechor, and they eat it. That's brought as a Korban. If it gets a mum in it, if it gets a blemish in it, then it becomes Psulei HaMikdashim, and then it has certain limitations as to what you can do, but you can eat it outside of your shrine. You don't have to bring it as a korban, which is the way that we partially solve the problem today, which is that if you have a bechor, then if it has a mum in it, then you don't have to bring it up as a korban, though that causes a problem having to wait for it to get a mum. So we, a lot of times, they use the process of what's called Yad Nachri Be'emtza, that if you have a partnership with the goy, that also removes the necessity for the bechor. Ma bechor, einu elo bifnei habayit. Just like Bechor, of course, can only be before the bayit, means when Beit HaMikdash is extant, because otherwise you can't bring the Korban on the Mizbeach, and you put the Dam and the Emurim on the Mizbeach. It's not relevant without a Beit HaMikdash. Af Maser, einu elo bifnei habayit. So too, with Maaser Sheni, it would only be bifnei habayit. Ma le Bechor, shekein ta'un matan damim ve'emurim legabe Mizbeach. So wait a minute, how can you learn from Bechor to Maaser Sheni? Bechor and Maaser Sheni function on different planes. A Bechor has a requirement of Dam and Emurim on the Mizbeach, which means that it must have the Mizbeach, it must have the Mikdash, in order to do whatever is demanded of you. On the other hand, when it comes to Maaser Sheni just requires being inside the Chumot Yerushalayim, inside the walls of Yerushalayim. It doesn't require a Mikdash at all. So how can you tell me just because a Bechor requires a Mikdash, that Maaser Sheni must also require the Mikdash? Maybe there's no correlation between them because of the lack of necessity for a Mizbeach for Maaser Sheni. Bikurim yochichu. Bikurim will prove you otherwise. Mala Bikurim shekein ti'unim hanacha. Bikurim also present the problem because they also require the Mizbeach, which is the fact that you have to place them down next to the Mizbeach or they have to touch the Mizbeach. So what the Breita tried to do at this point in time, according to Rabbi Shmuel, is figure out what is the din with regards to Maaser Sheni. Can Maaser Sheni be brought up to Yerushalayim bizman hazeh and eaten inside the walls of Yerushalayim, even though the walls of Yerushalayim may not exist, and even though the Beit HaMikdash may not exist? Rabbi Shmuel suggests, well, we can learn that from Bechor. Bechor also has to be brought up to Yerushalayim, eaten inside of Yerushalayim, and without a Mikdash, that's not relevant. The Breita says, that's because Bechor requires Mizbeach. Maaser Sheni doesn't require Mizbeach. Can't learn from Bechor. Breita says, learn from Bikurim. Bikurim don't require Mizbeach, and they should be able to teach us that just like today, there's no requirement of Bikurim, so too, there should be no requirement of Maaser Sheni. The Breita again retorts and says, that's not true. Bikurim do require Mizbeach, which is Hanacha, the placement of the Bikurim next to the Mizbeach. So now we can't prove anything to Maaser Sheni from Bechor or from Bikurim, because they both require Mizbeach. Maaser Sheni doesn't require Mizbeach. Talmud Omar, the solution to the problem is, Bechalta Sham Lifnei Hashem Elokecha, that you eat it before Hashem, your God. Mikish Maser LeBechor. There's a Hekesh in the Pasuk, a juxtaposition in the Pasuk, that tells us that there is a din that applies to Bechor, will also apply to Maaser Sheni. Ma Bechor Inu Lifnei Abayit. Just like Bechor is only when the Beit HaMikdash is extant, Av Maser Inu Lifnei Abayit. So too, Maaser Sheni is only relevant when there is a Beit HaMikdash. That's the end of the Breita. We'll come back in 1 second to discuss what the proof is, the Rav Sheshit from that Breita. The one thing to note over here is that the Pasuk that is brought from Dvarim Yudalit, is probably the wrong Pasuk that they are quoting over here, because in Dvarim Yudalit, when it mentions the Pasuk that they quoted, it says, Natata kesef b'chol asher taveh nafshecha. If you bring Maaser Sheni up to Yerushalayim, you can expend it on food items. Bakar, tzon, yayin, shechar. Kol asher tirshalcha nafshecha. V'achalta sham lifnei Hashem Elokecha. V'samachta atav beitecha. Over there you see no mention of Bechor, and you see only about Maaser Sheni. And that's the quoted pasuk that we have here, which is Achalta Sham Lifnei Hashem Elokecha. But that is pasuk Chavav. Earlier on in that parshia of Aser Taser, we're less familiar with it in Eretz Yisrael, and Chutz Laretz they're more familiar with it because of the laning. But in pasuk Chav Gimel it says Vachalta Lifnei Hashem Elokecha, Vamakom Mishayiv Chayar the Shaken Shemo Sham Masag De Gantcha Tiroshcha Vitzarecha Ubechorot Bekarcha Vitzonecha. So over there it mentions Maaser and Bechor in the same pasuk, and that Maaser is clearly Maaser Sheni based on the remaining psukim that speak about redeeming it and taking up to Yerushalayim. So that's why likely the word Sham is in brackets over here, because that pasuk that they quote with the word Sham, even though it's found by Maaser Sheni, doesn't have the Hekesh in the pasuk. The Hekesh is found in a pasuk that is a little earlier, like three psukim earlier, where the word Sham is left out. So that Hekesh between Maaser the Bechor teaches us that despite any logical dissonance that you would have, that Bechor, because it's not brought without the Mikdash, so too Maaser Sheni is not brought without the Mikdash. Now the Gemara asks, Vimita, if it was the case that Kriya was Me'akevet, Lifruch, then you should have added that to the things that make it that you can't learn Maaser Sheni from Bikurim. Mali Bikurim, we were trying to figure out reasons why you can't learn Maaser Sheni from Bikurim, and the Braita gave only one reason, because Bikurim has Hanacha, and Maaser Sheni does not have Hanacha. So that says that Maaser Sheni can't be learned from Bikurim, because Bikurim has this additional item that connects it to the Mizbeach. If you tell me that Bikurim also has a requirement of Kriya, then that should be another thing that distinguishes it from Maaser Sheni. Bikurim can't teach to Maaser Sheni because Bikurim have Hanacha and they have Kriya. The fact that the Braita didn't mention that shows you that it must believe that Kriya is not Me'akevet. Now, even though the truth is that Maaser Sheni also has a requirement of Kriya, which is Vidui Maaser. But Vidui Maaser is not directly connected to Maaser Sheni. It's actually done in the year that you don't give Maaser Sheni. It's done in the fourth year, which is after the first 3 years of the Masrot, where the third year is Maaser Ani, and in Shemitah, which is the year after the sixth year. So first of all, it's not directly correlated with Maaser Sheni, and second of all, it is a broader declaration that you've done the right thing over the last 3 years in clearing out all the things that you need to do in order to fulfill your obligations with regards to Trumot and Masrot. But it's not directly correlated to Maaser Sheni, so therefore you wouldn't consider it to be a Kriya of Maaser Sheni, even though it's called Vidui Maaser. Another Bikurim, which have a Kriya that is particular to them, that should have been a chumrah that you would have mentioned. The fact that it doesn't mention it here, according to Rabbi Yossi, who's quoting Rabbi Ishmael, it shows you that they believe that kriya ain't a me'akevet, is not me'akev. I'm Rabbi Ashi, nehi di'kuva leka, mitzvah mi'leka. Even if you believe that kriya, mikra bikurim, is not me'akev, everybody believes that the right way to bring up bikurim is to do mikra bikurim. Velema mitzvah velifroch. You could still have asked from the fact that there is a mitzvah to do Mikra Bikurim to say that that is something that makes Bikurim different from Maaser Sheni. So you can't prove anything to me from the fact that there's an absence of Mikra Bikurim from the Braita, because no matter which way you went, whether you believe that Kriya is Me'akevet or whether you believe that Kriya is just a mitzvah, in either case, that would have been a sufficient reason to tell you that you can't learn Maaser Sheni from Bikurim. Because that's a unique aspect of Bikurim that cannot be extrapolated to Maaser Sheni. So it's irrelevant whether it's Me'akev or not. It should have been asked in the Braita. So then why wasn't it asked? That the answer is, El Amar Rav Ashi, Kevan, Di'ika Bikurei Ager, Deboi Lameimar, Asher Nishba, Hashem Labutenu, Velo Matzi Amar. The problem is that in Mikra Bikurim, in Parshat Kitavo, when it brings the Mikra Bikurim over there, it has a requirement that you make a declaration of the such. That Hashem had promised to our forefathers to give to us. Well, only someone who has forefathers that were Jewish can make such a claim. A ger who converts can't make such a claim because his forefathers were not promised anything about Eretz Yisrael. They weren't even Jewish. So there is an instance where an individual can bring up Bikurim, And lechatchila, he will have no obligation to do mikra bikurim, not a mitzvah, and not me'akev. And therefore, the ger who brings it up brings bikurim without saying mikra bikurim. And in that case, you can't say that there's a requirement of mikra bikurim. So velo psikale, since it's not psikale, it's not a definitive statement. You can't make a definitive statement that bikurim always require a mikra bikurim, because there are people or instances where you don't need mikra bikurim. This happens to be one of them. The Rishonim bring other examples based on the Gemara we saw in Baba Batra on Daf Pei Aleph that include a individual who is working the land of a Nochri, possibly, or if an individual sends it through a Shliach, or if a person is possibly there, the Machloket in Baba Batra is a sharecropper on the land, the question is, Kinyan Peirot, Kinyan Guf Dami. Is that enough or sufficient to say that you own the land because of the declaration that you're making over here that I brought this up from my land, from the property that I have in Eretz Yisrael? So all of those people might be precluded from having saying mikra bikurim, which means lo psika milta. You can't make a statement that bikurim is more chamur than maaser sheni because you require mikra bikurim. You don't always require mikra bikurim. That's the reason it's left out of the braita, and that means you can't prove anything from this braita as to whether these tanaim believe mikra bikurim is me'akev or lo me'akev, because they left it out because there are instances where there's no obligation to have mikra bikurim. It might be that when there is such an obligation, it is me'akev, or it is a mitzvah. You just can't determine from what we know here. Just take a quick diversion to discuss this issue of the ger. We spoke about it much more in detail in Baba Batra on Daf Pei Aleph, but many of the poskim, including the Balei Tosafot, that are mentioned in the Gemara in Baba Batra, note that our Gemara in the Bavli, it's a Mishnah in bikurim, make a definitive statement that a ger cannot say mikra bikurim. And not only can they not say mikra bikurim, they also can't daven the beginning of Shmoneh Esrei. Shmoneh Esrei, which is Elokeinu ve'Elokei Avoteinu, Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchak ve'Elokei Yaakov, because they can't say Elokei Avoteinu. It's not their avot. So how can they make such a declaration? Or in the second paragraph in Benching of Noda Lecha, also over there, can't speak about the land that was promised to us. So because of all those inconsistencies in what they're saying, the Bavli, that is both the Mishnah and the Bavli, the Gemara and Baba Batra, and many of the Rishonim believe that a ger cannot say any of these items. He cannot say, oh, okay, Abuteinu, and therefore he's precluded from saying them, and he'll have to either have a different Nusach, or he possibly can't daven for the Omud. Maybe he can, in his own private Shemoneh Esrei, he can adjust it. But if he has to get up in front of the tzibor, he can't go up in front of the tzibor and say, Elokeinu ve'elokei Abuteinu, because it's just not true. What you're saying is not totally crazy. I'll read you the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi takes a different view than the Bavli, and this is what the Yerushalmi says. Tani v'shem Rabbi Yehuda. Ger atzmo mevi v'kore. The ger brings it, and it's kore. Matam. What's the reason? Ki av hamon goyim nitaticha. Hashem says to Abraham that you're going to be an Av Hamon Goyim. You're not just the father of the Jewish nation. You're going to be father of many nations. L'sha Avar Haita Av Be'Aram. In the past, you were only an Av to Aram. Akshav, Mikamelech Hata Av B'chol HaGoyim. You're an Av to all of the Goyim. B'shul Ben Levi Amar Halacha Ki Rabbi Yehuda. The Halacha is, like Rabbi Yehuda, Ata Ubda Kumei to Rabbi Abou. Every incident came for Rabbi Abou. V'hore Rabbi Yehuda, and he paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. This Yerushalmi has significant influence, especially on the Rambam, who paskins that a ger can say mikra bikurim, a ger can say Shmoneh Esrei, a ger can do all of these items. And then there's the very famous Tshuvat Rambam, where he gets a question from Ovadia Ager, and Ovadia Ager asks him exactly this question, and as I noted at the time, and I'll say it again, it does not sound like the Rambam at all. The Rambam over there sounds like some Hasidic Rebbe telling Ovadia Ager that you are the real children. We are all banim to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but you are banim lamakom. You are the children of God, and therefore you can always say Elokei Avoteinu because you are the true children because you come through HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not through human beings. Anyway, it's a beautiful tshuva there, but that's what the Rambam mentions over there. And because of that, the Psak Halacha follows that view of the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, who all believe that a ger can say these items based on that Yerushalmi. So again, our the Bavli, and here's another case where the Bavli clearly leans in the other direction, but many of the poskim take up the view of the Yerushalmi to allow a ger to say all of these items. So now, vilahader dina. The Gemara asks an interesting question, which is, the Braita of Rabbi Yishmael said, learn from Bechor, learn from Bikurim, and in both cases we rejected it. Normally, a Tanaic work would then say, if I can't learn it from one, let's learn it from both of them together. Which is, let's take the common denominator between these two, and that common denominator could teach us the din. And that's what the Gemara says here, vilahader dina. Now, even though the Braita concluded that there's a Hekesh is much better than a Tzadah Shaveh, because a Tzadah Shaveh is a logical argument, and that means it can be undermined by logic. A Hekesh supersedes logic, which means that it doesn't really matter what the logic is. The Pasuk's telling you there's a connection between Bechor and Maaser Sheni. Once you have that, then no logical argument matters. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, just as a matter of, we call it principle or style, the Braita should have done this. Why didn't it do this? Lahadr dina v'tete b'me'atzad. Why don't we say, let's learn it out from Bikurim and Bechor together. We take both of them, they're both only relevant when there is a Beit HaMikdash. So too, Maaser Sheni should only be relevant when there is a Beit HaMikdash. Mar says, Mishum de'ikah l'mifrach, because there was a logical undermining of that, which is, Malat Tzad HaShevesh Ben, Sheken Yesh Ben Tzad Mizbeach, which is the problem with each one of them individually, is also the problem of them together, which is they both have a connection to the Mizbeach. And that connection to the Mizbeach makes it that they're not relevant for Maaser Sheni. Bikurim require the Hanacha, the placement next to the Mizbeach. Bechor requires blood and Chalavim on the Mizbeach. So now you can't prove to me anything that if Bechor and Bikurim don't apply when the post the Korban, anything about Maaser Sheni, because Maaser Sheni doesn't require Mizbeach at all. And that means that Maaser Sheni might be applicable even post the Korban, even though Bikurim and Bechor are not applicable. And that's what we, in the end, said. It was the Hekesh that taught us that Maaser Sheni is the same as Bechor. Maika Sabar, what does this Tana hold? The problem is that the underlying question, which is the Gemara is going to explain really here, is that why is it the Tana so certain that with regards to Bechor, and maybe even Bikurim, post the Korban, they're not relevant? But Maaser Sheni, he's uncertain. What gives him certainty about those items, and no certainty about the other items? If you tell me it has to do with the Mizbeach is not always a relevant factor because you can do certain things with or without a Mizbeach or with or without Kedusha. And that's what the Gemara says. My Kasavar. I Kasavar, Kedusha Rishona Kidusha L'Shaita V'Kidusha L'Atid Lavo, that the first Kedusha that was imbued in Yerushalayim in Eretz Yisrael was a permanent Kedusha, that it lasts forever and it will never be removed. That means that once the Kedusha was placed inside of Yerushalayim, it never leaves Yerushalayim. And therefore, Afilu Bechor Nami. Bechor then could have also been brought. The Rashi over here notes, and it's a Gemara in Megillah, that the one who holds that Kedusha is permanent also believes that you don't need a Beit HaMikdash to be Makriv. So you could have put up a Mizbeach and done whatever you needed to do inside of Yerushalayim because of that permanent Kedusha. If the Kedusha exists, that means all you got to do is erect a Mizbeach, and then you can do whatever you need to do. So then why is it so obvious that a Bechor cannot be brought today? A Bechor could be brought today. Just put a Mizbeach there, and you can bring a Bechor and deal with whatever the outcome of that is. But why is the Braita so certain that you don't bring a Bechor post the Korban? If you believe there's permanent Kedusha, you should be able to bring it. Now, whether the Gemara here is literally just speaking about Kedusha Rishona, or the Gemara is just using the terminology Kedusha Rishonah to refer to Kedusha Shniyah as well, is mentioned by the Rishonim. But what is clear here from the Gemara, and I'll show you this in 1 second, is that there is a bifurcation between the din of the Mikdash and the din of Eretz Yisrael. And that is because Ika Savar, Kedusha Rishonah, Kitcha L'Shaita, V'lo Kitcha L'Atid Lavo, if you believe that the first Kedusha was not permanent, and that post the Korban, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim dissipated, then, Afilo Bechor Nami Tibaye. You should have also asked about Bechor. Here we're following the Girsa of Rashi. I'll come back after we finish and discuss what the problems are with that Girsa, and what the Bali and Tosafot say. But Rashi says here, if you believe that the first Kedusha was not permanent, then ask the same thing about Bechor. Why would you ask about a Bechor now, if the Kedusha was not permanent? So Rashi over here says that the Gemara is assuming that the Bechor was brought pre the Korban. They were makriv the bechor on the mizbeach, the mizbeach, the dam and the chalavim on the mizbeach prior to the korban abayit. Now we're post korban and we want to know, can you eat the bechor in Yerushalayim? So the Gemara says, then if you think that the kedusha is not permanent, and you got the bechor on the mizbeach before the korban, and now you have a question about whether bechor is applicable or not applicable, it looks exactly like Maaser Sheni now. It doesn't need mizbeach anymore because you took care of the part of the mizbeach. So now it looks identical to Maaser Sheni, and the question now is, can you eat it post the korban? The requirement of bechor is to be eaten inside the chumot Yerushalayim. The requirement of Maaser Sheni is to be eaten inside the chumot Yerushalayim. So why is it so obvious to you that bechor cannot be eaten inside of Yerushalayim? Whereas Maaser Sheni is a question. They both should be a question if you think the kedusha is not permanent. Now, as I said before, it's clear here that the Gemara bifurcates it, and Rashi makes it pretty obvious as well, which is, because Savar Kedusha Rishona shall bayit. Of the bayit is permanent or not permanent. The reason is because Keheka Desfir Levi Kedushat Aretz, the same way you think by Kedushat Aretz. The question would be moot if you believe that the kedusha of the Aretz did not persist, because otherwise there's no Chiyuv of Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni derives because of the fact that there is Kedushat Aretz. And that's what obligates you in Shumot HaMatzrot. The mitzvot of Tluyot Ba'aretz are dependent on whether there's Kedushat Aretz or no Kedushat Aretz. So how could you even have a question if you believe there was no Kedushat Aretz? Then why are we even speaking about Maaser Sheni? There's no obligation for Maaser Sheni if there's no Kedushat Aretz. So what Rashi says, it's the given that there is Kedushat Aretz. The only question is the Kedusha of Yerushalayim permanent or not permanent? So Kedushat Aretz, permanent. That's why you're obligated in Maaser Sheni. Question is, the Kedusha of the Mikdash, or Kedusha of Yerushalayim, how permanent is that Kedusha? And there are two options. It could either be that Kedusha Daritz is permanent, Yerushalayim is not permanent, or it could be that Kedusha Daritz is permanent, and so is the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. That brings up a question within the Rishonim. The Balei Tosafot over here do the same thing that Rashi does, and bifurcate the din. The Tosafot says it very clearly, that there is a clear division between Yerushalayim and the rest of the Aretz. And therefore, you could ask the question separately. You can ask these completely independently, which is there Kedushat Aretz, or is there Kedushat Yerushalayim? And the answer of one would not affect the other. That's how the Balei Tosafot say it, that they make it very clear. The Lo Talia Ha Baha. They have no connection one to the other, and therefore you could bifurcate the din. Of here, the Balei Tosafot only do it in the direction that Rashi does it, which is, there is for sure Kedushat Aretz, question about Kedushat HaMikdash. In Zvachim, where the Balei Tosafot speak about this much more extensively, they actually speak about multiple permutations of how this could work. Over here, they only speak about Kedushat HaAretz, yes, question about Kedushat HaMikdash. Over there, they speak in the other direction, which is the possibility that there is Kedushat HaMikdash, and then there's a question about Kedushat HaAretz. So in that vein, you could actually see Rishonim coming up, and the truth is that Rishonim do give these types of explanations with three different models. You can have a model where you would say the two are correlated. That it would be that the Kedushat HaAretz and Kedushat Mikdash would be correlated. If there is no Kedushat HaMikdash, there is no Kedushat HaAretz. And vice versa, if there's no Kedushat HaAretz, there's no Kedushat HaMikdash. And that they are connected or correlated. That seems to be the view of the Rambam, possibly, and the Raivud. They argue about which way it's going, but they seem to correlate between the two of them. And we'll speak about that in 1 second. Rashi and the Balei Tosafot clearly think there is a bifurcation between the two. Over here, we only see it in one direction, which is there is Kedushat Aretz, question about Kedushat HaMikdash. In other places, the Balei Tosafot speak about, yes, Kedushat Mikdash, question about Kedushat Aretz. If you separate between them, you can ask each question independently. What's interesting is the view of the Rambam, because the view of the Rambam is that there's a difference between the Kedushah Rishona, which is the Kedushah Yoshua Binun, versus the Kedusha of Ezra, which comes up later. And what the Rambam says is that the Kedusha of Ezra was just a kind of ceremonial type of thing, but it really didn't do anything. So he said, well then, how is it possible that we have Kedusha in Yerushalayim if what Ezra did was such so ceremonial? So the Rambam says that is because the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is permanent. And the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is permanent, meaning that once Yerushalayim became Kadosh, it never loses its Kedusha. But then he goes on to say, that's not true of Kedushat Aretz. So Kedushat Aretz was lost after we were thrown out of the land. That means that by the Churban Bayit Rishon, the Kedushah of Yerushalayim remained, but the Kedushat Aretz was then ruined.
But then the Rambam goes on to say that's not true in the Kedusha of Ezra. Which is that when Ezra came up, and then they were Mekadesh the land again, and there was Kedusha the Eretz again, that Kedusha is permanent. The formulation of the Rambam is the following. In the time of Yoshua, the Kedusha came through kibush, came through conquering. Therefore, when you are conquered, the Kedusha dissipates. On the other hand, when it came to the time of Ezra, the Kedusha was established through chazakah, not by kibush, but simply by living and taking possession of the land, and that cannot be undone by someone else coming. So the Rambam statement is extremely difficult. Why, first of all, why should it be that kibush can be undone by kibush, but chazakah can't be undone by chazakah? That's number one. Number two is, you would have thought that the kibush of Yoshua would have instilled or imbued a kedusha that was much more permanent than the chazoko of Ezra when they came up and they just settled on the land. There's nothing that's being done there to be mekadesh the land. So it seems almost counterintuitive what the Rambam says. And the Ravid says that on the spot, he made this all up. It's not true. And the Ravid is of the opinion that both kedushat HaMikdash and kedushat HaAretz are not permanent and they're gone. And the Ravid states over there, that's why you can walk onto Har HaBayit. He says you can take a tiyul on Har HaBayit. There's no kedusha on Har HaBayit today. People who are older the Har HaBayit, this source in the Ravid is one of the reasons that people are older the Har HaBayit, which means that there is no kedusha today, which obviously would even obviate the need to stay in outside the boundaries of the areas of the Azara, to go to the mikveh before you go, but it gives a tzad, the hakel. There is a me'iri as well, and the Rambam, and the Tshuvot HaRambam. There are all these different sources that the Ravid says clearly there is no kedusha, and disagrees with the Rambam wholesale. And again, the Ravid sees a connection. He links the two together, which is kedusha HaAretz and kedusha HaMikdash are linked, and therefore they're neither of them apply today. They're both gone. The Rambam in the first stage seems not to link them, and then in the second bite, it seems to link them and says that they're both permanent at that point in time. So there is a beautiful vort. I mean, many of the Mishnah Lamelech, others try to answer for on behalf of the Rambam, because the Rambam later on, and he mentions it here as well, says that Shvit and Truma today are only Midrabanan, not Midoraita. If he thinks Kedushat HaAretz is permanent, why are they only Midrabanan? There, it's easy to explain. You can look at the Rambam the other places, because there are other qualifications. You need the majority of Klal Yisrael to be in Eretz Yisrael in order to have the Kedushat HaAretz impact in terms of the obligations in these items to make them Doraita. And therefore, you could have it that Kedushat HaAretz is permanent, but these items are still only Midrabanan. The others try to answer up for the Rambam as to why there is this, what seems to be counterintuitive explanation and connection between Kedushat HaAretz and Kedushat HaMikdash. And Rav Soloveitchik in Halachuva gives a very beautiful answer that explains why that is. First of all, there's an underlying premise or assumption that Kedushat Yerushalayim is permanent, as the Rambam says, because the Shekhinah never leaves. Once the Shekhinah is there, the Shekhinah remains there permanently, and that's what allowed them to build Beit Sheni even without the Aron. In the first Beit HaMikdash, how was the Shekhinah there? It's because they brought the Aron into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and it filled with a cloud, which is the presence of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that's why the Shekhinah was there, because the Aron was there. And that's why we know that there was Kedusha. Again, second Beit HaMikdash, there was no Aron. So how could there be Kedusha? So that's this idea that once the Shekhinah rests in Yerushalayim, it never leaves, and that's a permanent Kedusha. So what the Rambam says is that when it came to the Kedusha in the first case, then the Kibush was destroyed once we had Churban HaBayit. Yerushalayim made Kadosh because of the Shekhinah, but the Kibush disappeared. And that's because the Kedusha was instilled in the reverse order. Over there, the Kibush was done first, the Kibush of Eretz Yisrael, which imbued it with Kedusha. Then only then was Kedushat Yerushalayim done, because they only made Yerushalayim into the center in the time of David HaMelech. That was post all the conquering, and then when Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash. So only at the tail end was there Kedushat Yerushalayim. So that means Kedushat Eretz Yisrael stemmed from Kibush, whereas Kedushat Yerushalayim stemmed from the Shekhinah. On the other hand, when they came in the time of Ezra, it's just the opposite. They first settled Yerushalayim and built the Beit HaMikdash, and then only after that spread out to areas around Yerushalayim, which means that the Kedusha of Chazakah in the time of Ezra stems from Yerushalayim. And since it's just an expansion of the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, it takes on the Ofi, right, the character of the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, which is a permanent Kedusha. And that's what meant by the Rambam, that Kibush can be undone, because Kibush instilled Kedusha, but had nothing in connection to Yerushalayim, which was the permanent Kedusha. The time of Ezra, where the Chazakah is what established the Kedusha, it emanated from Yerushalayim. It started in Yerushalayim and then spread out, and that made it a permanent form of Kedusha. So that's a beautiful explanation for that Rambam. I'm just bringing them up. I just want you to understand that there can be all different models here based on the Gemara. In our Gemara, it seems to underline this whole Gemara over here it seems to indicate that Kedushat HaAretz is assumed, and Kedushat HaMikdash is what is that question over here. Again, it uses Kedusha Rishona, which could or could not have implications. The Ritva tries to wipe those out by just saying it just means the Kedusha, whichever the latest Kedusha is, just happens to use Kedusha Rishona. But you could argue that it really is discussing Kedusha Rishona because of these differences of opinions within the Rishonim as to which Kedusha was permanent, including that of Yerushalayim, which we just discussed, the Machlokes between the Ritva and the Rambam. So therefore, it's very unclear here whether you think Yerushalayim has permanent Kedusha, or whether you think it doesn't have permanent Kedusha, as to why it's so obvious to the Gemara, the Din of Bechor, and not obvious about the Din of Maaseh Sheni. It seems to be that they should be correlated. Whatever your answer is should give you the same outcome in either case. Either you have a question about both, or you have a question about neither. So Amar Rabino, Lolam Kasavar, Kitcha L'Shaita V'lo Kitcha L'Tadavo. The answer is that it was a case where there is no permanent Kedusha. V'alcha B'Bechor, שנזרק דומו קודם חורבן הבית, וחרב הבית, ועדיין בשרו קיים. The case here is a case where the Bechor was put on the Mizbeach before the Chorban, then post the Chorban. Now the question is, the Basar that remains afterwards, that's the question over here. ומקשינה בשרו לדמו, and then there's a hekesh between the Basar and the Dam. מה דמו במזבח? Just like the Dam must go on the Mizbeach, Apisaro Mizbeach, so too the Basar, not that it goes on the Mizbeach, but will require the Mizbeach in order to be eaten. And that has to do with the Pasuk by Bechor, which very closely correlates the eating of the Bechor with the Dam that goes on the Mizbeach. As the Pasuk says by the Bechor in Bamidbar Yudchet, by Parshat Korach, Ach, Beshochor Shor, O Bechor Kesev, O Bechor Eis, Lo Tifteh Kodeshem, Et Damam Tizrok Al Mizbeach. Et chelbam taktir yisheh d'reach nikoach l'ashem, ubisaram yulach kechazeh tznufa, ukeshok yamim l'cha yiyeh. So over here you see that huge correlation, almost a hekesh, between the first pasuk that talks about the dam on the mizbeach and the basar that is found in the subsequent pasuk. And that's what the Gemara says here. There's a hekesh which correlates between the basar and the dam. And therefore, just like the dam requires mizbeach, so too the basar requires mizbeach. Umekish maser lebechor. And then you have a second hekesh, which is, once we know this din by Bechor, we're going to apply it to Maaser Sheni. So now the Gemara asks a question, which, again, it's getting us ready for Kodoshim. We've had a number of these items come up, so it's getting us ready to go into the next Seder after we finish up Seder Nizikin. There are a number of dapim over there that deal with a basic tenet that has to do with Kodoshim, which is that if you learn something through one of the Shloshusrei Midot, Shatorin Nidreshet Behem, does that grant you the right to then go and use it again to learn something derivatively through that? Which means that, if, for instance, if I use a Kal V'Chomer to learn something, can I then make another Kal V'Chomer from the item that I learned to a third item? Is there a transitive property that is associated with these Limudim? The basic premise is that once you've used the Shloshusrei Midot to Torah, it's Ki'ilu Nichtab B'Torah Atzma. As if it's written in the Torah. So it's not that you use the Shloshusrei Midot and now it's still floating out there and you're going to learn something from that item that you learned. Once you've had that, then it's as if it's written explicitly in the Torah. For instance, a Gzeir Shavah. If I have a Gzeir Shavah that teaches me a din, it's not simply that the din applies to the original location and now I'm moving it to the other location in theory, and therefore now I'll apply it. It's as if now it's written in the second location through the Gzeir Shavah. That means if it's written in the second location, I can learn from that second location to a third location. And that is the underlying assumption by any limud. You could do successive limudim. You could stack them on top of each other and it would work. No problem. The exception to that rule is kodoshim. By kodoshim, we have a principle that you cannot do that. You cannot extrapolate from one to the other. Partly because kodoshim is not a world of logic. It's a world of a kodosh baruch hu. It's a world that really defies logic. As opposed to nizikin, which is really the world of logic. Kodashim are all Gzerat HaKatuv by definition. It's not really understandable. It's all what Hashem prescribes. And so therefore, it's very hard to argue that if you've taken a limud from one place to the other, that you should be able to extrapolate it to another location, because that may not be what the Torah intended, or may not be the logical extension. There in Ezu Mekuman, it goes through all different permutations. It goes through every permutation you can have of a limud that starts, and then a limud that's built on top of it. Can you do that second limud or not? Then it goes through them, proves or disproves each one of them. One of them happens to be, and it's a machloket there in Ezim Mukaman, which is this case of a hekesh to a hekesh. If you have a hekesh, can you then learn from one hekesh to a second hekesh? Over here, we're being mekesh, the basar of the bechor, to the dam of the bechor. And then we're taking that basar of the bechor and being mekesh to maaser sheni. So it's a double hekesh. So there, the Gemara says, no double hekesh shot in kodoshim. But, maaser dagan chulinu. The difference is that maaser sheni is chulin. So if it's chulin, we said before that if it's not kodoshim, there's no problem with doing these double limudim. The question really revolves around what the Gemara is going to say now. This is the Machloket Tanaim in Eishu Mekoman. Hanicha l'man d'amar patar l'meid azlinan. It depends whether you focus on the object you are learning or that which you are learning from. In a limud, you can have an imbalance, which is that you can have the teaching item be kodashim and the learning item be chulin, or vice versa. The teaching item be chulim and the item that you're learning to be kodashim. In which of those two cases is it deemed to be chulin? Do we say that it is chulin when the object that we're learning towards is chulin? Or is it only considered to be chulin when it's the object that we're learning from is chulin? And that is a machloket in the Gemara in Zvachim. And that's what the Gemara says now. Hanicha l'man d'amar, that works well according to one, batar l'meid azlinan. We go after the object that we're learning to, that defines whether it's chulin and kodashim. So don't have a problem now. You learn from dam of the bechor to basar of the bechor. And then you learn from basar bechor to maaser sheni. Maaser sheni is chulin. And so the object of your limud is chulin. That's considered to be chulin. And you can have a double limud in things that are not kodashim. No problem. And you solved your problem. And now we have the answer to our question as how do we learn maaser sheni from bechor? Bechor itself is there a hekesh. Ela lamad amar batar melamed azlinan. What defines the limud over here is the object from which you learn. Over here, that is kodashim. Bechor is kodashim. And you're learning to maaser sheni, which is chulin. If it's defined by the object that you're learning from, that would classify it as kodashim, and then it would be a double hekesh in kodashim, which does not work. So ma'ika the meimar. How are you going to deal with that? That is because damu basar chada miltehi. Dam and basar are considered to be a singular unit, that it's not just a hekesh of these two items, but rather that correlation in the pasuk that says that you must, the damam tizrok kalamizbeach, and then ubisaram yulach, there's a vav chibor that connects the two of them, that says that they both are really correlated with the mizbeach. What goes on in the mizbeach and what you eat are integrally connected, and therefore it's considered to be one item. It's not even a hekesh. It means that the basar needs the mizbeach in order to be mutar. The pasuk by bechor really correlates heavily between the dam and the basar, and therefore that teaches you that they are one unit. So it's not really a hekesh within bechor. It's really a totality of bechor. The totality of bechor is that it needs mizbeach. That's whether the dam or the basar, they all need mizbeach. Since they need mizbeach, now we can take that and make a hekesh. That'll be the first hekesh we're making to maaser sheni. And in maaser sheni, we're now going to tell you, you need the mizbeach. And without a mizbeach, you have a problem because of this hekesh to bechor. So even if you believe that the kedusha of Yerushalayim is a case where there is no permanent kedusha, which is what Rashi said the conclusion of the Gemara was. Conclusion of the Gemara was that Dushat the Aretz permanent, that's why you're Chayim and Maaser Sheni, but Yerushalayim was a case where there is no permanent Dusha. And so technically you should have been able to bring Maaser Sheni up and eat it in Yerushalayim because, and you would be deemed to be inside the walls of Yerushalayim. But it's compared to Bechor. And Bechor requires Mizbeach, and so too Maaser Sheni requires Mizbeach. Absent the Mizbeach, Bechor correlates itself with Mizbeach, and then Maaser Sheni through Bechor correlates itself with the Mizbeach. Absent the Mizbeach, you can't bring them, and you can't do anything with them, and that's why today without a Mizbeach, we don't bring Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim, we don't eat the Bechor in Yerushalayim. Now, you asked the question, which is a fair question, which is, the case that we bring over here in the Gemara seems a far-fetched case, and the answer is it is a far-fetched case. There can only be like one instance in history when that could have happened, which is that you had brought the Dama Bechor on the Mizbeach, and then it was a Korban HaBayit, and then you were eating it afterwards, which is basically the day after the Korban. I don't know anybody who was so careful about eating, but like where they really eat Bechor the day after the Korban, they were still fighting the battles and putting out the fires at that point in time. But it's a theoretical idea. The reason it's important is because that theoretical case tells us that there is such a situation where we can separate between the hakrava and the eating of the bechor. And that's what we're after over here, which is just isolating the achilat bechor from the hakravata bechor. And once you can do that, then you can ask a question about its correlation to maaser sheni, because you've eliminated the mizbeach from the picture. Once you've eliminated the mizbeach from the picture, now there's a fair question. Bechor and maaser, how do I deal with them? Because they're both about eating. Eating inside Yerushalayim. So yes, it's a theoretical or an unusual case, but that does allow us the opportunity to investigate Bechor in that context. Now, the problem that the Baal Yad Tosafot of Rashi is that the Gemara over here introduced that crazy case after it already asked the question in the previous series of the Gemara. The Gemara asks, if Kedusha Rishona was permanent, then Afilu Bechor Nami should also be something that you could bring even post the Korban. And then the reverse case was, if there is no permanent Kedusha, Bechor Nami Tibai, why don't you ask the question about Bechor? Rashi said, you know what that case is? That's the case where it was put on the Mizbeach, and you're asking about the time period to eat. The Gemara never introduced that. That's the next line of the Gemara. Rashi is assuming that the Gemara already knows that, and is asking the question based on that. And that's what the Baal Yad Tosafot are bothered by. The Gemara is about to bring that answer. How can you assume that Gemara knows it in the previous statement? And for that reason, the Baal Yad Tosafot think that Rashi's explanation over here is very difficult. For that, amongst other reasons that they give, that Rashi's explanation is different. And therefore, the Baal Yad Tosafot favor an alternate girsa that was found. You should know that there are multiple different girsaot over here. The Ramban goes through most of the girsaot and favors Rashi's girsa in the end, which is the girsa that we have in our Gemara, saying that it seems to be the oldest or the best of the girsaot. But nevertheless, the Baal Yad Tosafot here note that they had an alternate girsa in the Gemara, and they felt that it makes more sense this way. L'chein tzarich lomar d'garista el, that the girsa should be b'isavar lokidcha maiser nami. As opposed to what we have over here, that where the Gemara says, oh, if there was not permanent kedusha b'shalayim, b'chor nami tibaye, the Gemara says over there, maiser nami. Instead of b'chor, it should be also maiser. V'achi perusho. Afilu maiser nami lo yeh mitachel b'shalayim klal b'lo pidayon to lo avin klal lifnei Hashem elokecha. Isn't there a requirement by b'chor and by maiser sheni to do it lifnei Hashem elokecha before God? If you believe that the kedusha b'shalayim is not permanent, then there is no lifnei Hashem Elokecha. And so just like by Bechor, you have no question you can't do it post the Korban, so to Maaser Sheni should be obvious that you don't do it post the Korban. And that's the way that the Baal Yad Tosafot say that the Gemara is going. The two Tzadim are this way. If you think Kedusha is permanent, then Bechor should also be fine. If you think Kedusha is not permanent, then just like you think that Bechor there's no chance, so to by Maaser Sheni there should be no chance. They both should have the same din in both instances. Then, afterwards, the Goris, and then in the continuation of the Gemara, we have in our Gemara, according to Rashi, Amar Avina, Lo'olam Kasavar Kicha L'Shaita Ve'lo Kicha L'Atid Lavo, that it was a case where there is no permanent Kedusha. The Goris, and his Gersa is, Tosfos says the other way around, Lo'olam Kicha Rishona Kicha L'Atid Lavo, it is a permanent Kedusha. The time of the Bechor, La Mishum Kedusha Taretz, or it's really should be Kedusha Tabayit, the reason Bechor has nothing to do with Kedusha Tabayit, El mishum de itkish b'saro l'damo, t'vinin she mizbeach kayam b'shat achilat b'saro. The Tosafot says that even with the permanent kedusha b'yushalayim, the reason of Bechor is that it's correlated with the mizbeach. And that unique correlation to the mizbeach means even if the kedusha b'yushalayim is permanent, then the mizbeach becomes a problem. Whereas Rashi's girsa is, Amar Avinu Omar Sava kedusha l'shaita v'lo kicha l'atid lavo. There's no permanent kedusha b'yushalayim, therefore there's no mizbeach. Since there's no Mizbeach, then it has implications for Bechor. But the Tosafot goes with the opposite Girsa, because he thinks you can separate between Kedushat Yerushalayim and the Mizbeach, and in that way solves the difficulty in Rashi's Pshat, because especially, he says, if Rashi's Girsa is right, where there is no permanent Kedushat Yerushalayim, that means that you open up the possibility of Bamot. The reason that we don't have Bamot today is because we believe that Kedushat Yerushalayim is permanent. That means when Mishkan Shiloh was extant, you had to bring your Korbanot to Mishkan Shiloh, because that was the central location. Post-Korban Shiloh, Bamot were Mutarot. During the time of Nov and Givon, you could have a Bama Gdolah in Nov and Givon, but Bamot were Mutarot. Then it came to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim had Kedusha. That Kedusha makes it. You can't have any more Bamot. But that is only true if you believe Kedusha Yerushalayim is permanent. If you don't believe Kedusha Yerushalayim is permanent, then you'd be in the same state again where you could bring Bamot. Ah, what's the din when you have Bamot? You can bring a Bechor in any city in Israel. So he says, what's the Gemara's question? If you don't believe that Yerushalayim's Kedusha is permanent, forget about Mizbeach in Yerushalayim. You can put up your Mizbeach in your local town and bring a Bechor. So he says, then what's Rashi's answer? If even if it's correlated with Mizbeach, you could still put up a Mizbeach anywhere. Put up a Bamot, bring your Bechor. Right, so you could argue against this view of the Baal Yad Tosafot that it's connected to Kedusha, to Yerushalayim, but rather, we're going to see in the Gemara in Zvachim, that is a drasha from the words of Nachala Mnucha, that there's only two periods of time where there's, in between them, there's a het there, but after them, there's no het there. So Belzebub correlates that with the permanent Kedusha of Yishalayim. You could argue that maybe even without permanent Kedusha of Yishalayim, Yishalayim ends the era of Bamot, and Bamot are gone afterwards, irrespective of Kedusha. That is what you have to answer on behalf of Rashi. But Belzebub sees the two correlated, and therefore says, if you had a no Kedusha in Yishalayim, Bamot would be Mutar, and Bechor would be totally okay. All right, now the Gemara continues, asking a question from the last two Mishnayot. Rashi already noted the problem in the Mishnah itself, which is that the Mishnah that we had on Yud Zayin said the items that you get malkot for are including Meiser Sheni Chutz L'Choma. Meiser Sheni that's eaten outside of Yerushalayim, you get malkot for it. But you already had in the first Mishnah on the Perek, it says you get malkot for Meiser Sheni V'Hekdesh Shelo Nifdu. If one consumes Meiser Sheni and Hekdesh that were not redeemed, then you will get malkot. So what the Gemara wants to know is, you have two Mishnayot saying that you get Malkot for Meiser Sheni. One is that you did not redeem it, implying that if you did redeem it, you wouldn't get Malkot. And then the next Mishnah says that if it's outside Yerushalayim, you're going to get Malkot no matter what. So how do you reconcile between these two Mishnayot? And that's what the Gemara asks over here. Tanina Chad Zimno. We already have this din of Meiser Sheni in the first Mishnah of the Perek back on Yud Gimel. Meiser Sheni Ve'ekdesh L'Niftu, you get Malkot for it. So why are you mentioning Malkot about Meiser Sheni in our Mishnah on Yud Zayin? It seems to be a duplication of the same thing. So I'm Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Sefer B'Meiser Sheni Tahor, V'Gavra Tahor. Oh, Mishnah on Yud Zayin is speaking about a case where the Meiser Sheni is Tahor, and the individual eating the Meiser Sheni is Tahor. T'ka'achil chutz l'choma. And the only problem is that he's eating it outside of Yerushalayim. And he gets Malkot for that. Meaning that he is someone that could eat it in Yerushalayim, and it is Meiser Sheni that could be eaten. And what he did wrong was he ate it outside of Yerushalayim, Malkot. So Reisha, the case in the Mishnah back on Yud Gimel, is B'Meiser Sheni Tamei, V'Gavra Tamei. It's a case where the Meiser Sheni itself is Tamei, and the individual is Tamei. V'Ka'achalei B'Yerushalayim. And he's eating it inside of Yerushalayim. So he's eating it in the right place, but he is the wrong person, and he's eating Meiser Sheni that can't be eaten because it is Tamei. And as Tosfos points out, it doesn't mean that you need to be both. That means that either if you're Tamei or the Meiser Sheni is Tamei, then you'll get Malkot. It's saying either or, not and. Uminale dechayev alei mishum tuma. How do you know you're chayav for that? The Mishnah on Yud Gimel says, because he didn't redeem it. That's why he's chayav. Which implies that you're allowed to redeem Meiser Sheni that is Tmeya. And that's what the Gemara is asking for. Where do you know that this is the case? Titania. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo bi'arti mimenu bitamei. I did not eliminate Meiser Sheni when I was Tamei. This is found in Bidui Masrot. There it says, Lo achalti ro'oni mimenu. I didn't eat it when I was an onein. That's one of the restrictions that we spoke about in the Mishnah that you'll get Malkot for. The other one is Lo biarti mimenu bitamei. I did not eliminate it, consume it while I was Tamei. Ben Shani Tamei bihu tahor. That's whether the individual is Tamei and the Meiser Sheni is tahor. Ben Shani tahor bihu Tamei. Or whether the individual is tahor. But the Meiser Sheni is Tamei, in either case, that is restricted by that which is said in Vidui Maser. Heichan Muzhar al Achila. So the Braita continues and says, that's very nice, but that's just an imperative that comes out of Vidui Maser, which is either an assay, it could be an Eitzah Tova, but it doesn't give you a lav. There's no distinguished lav over there, just Lo Biarti Mimenu B'Tamei. Where is the lav that tells you you're going to get Malkot for doing such a thing? Eini Yodea. Says, I don't know. The Braita now gets interrupted by the Gemara. The Braita itself continues, but the Gemara now interrupts the Gemara to understand, what does it mean, Eini Yodea? How do you not know where it's from? Tumat aguf behedyaktiv. If you have tumah of an individual that he cannot consume Meiser Sheni, that is explicit in the psukim. Nefesh asher tigabo vitama ad ha'arev. So it says, a person that touches it and is tamei until the erev, below yochal min ha'kodoshim. He may not consume of the Kodoshim. Now, this is found in Parshat Emor. It's actually in the Parshia that we've discussed before with regards to Truma, Ish Ish Mizer Aron. But the Gemara concludes that this pasuk is speaking about not Kodoshim, not Truma, but by Meiser Sheni. The reason they know that is because over here it's speaking about a case of a person who went to the mikveh, but has yet to have Heref Shemesh, has yet to have the sun set on him. As opposed to Truma, which in those psukim says that the time that you become Tahor, is once the sun sets on that individual, that's when they are Tahor. So that means that this must be speaking about something besides Truma. And what it's speaking about, and that's what the Gemara concludes, is that Maaser Sheni, which is something that has a requirement not being eaten bituma, which is Bobiarti Mimenu Bitame. And what it's teaching you over here is that that Maaser Sheni, if you go to the mikveh, it's fine. But if you didn't go to the mikveh, Bitame Ad Arev, and you're Tameh to the Arev, Lo Yochal Min HaKodeshim, you may not partake of the Kodeshim, which is Maaser Sheni. You may not eat Maaser Sheni when you are Tameh and have yet to go to the mikveh. If you went to the mikveh, you'd be a Tful Yom and you'd be permitted to eat Maaser Sheni. So he's, the Gemara says, what do you mean, Eni Yodea? It's a pasuk in Emor that tells you that if you are Tameh, then you can eat Maaser Sheni. Ela Tumat Atzmo Minayin. The question is about if the Maaser Sheni itself is Tameh, how do I know there is a restriction? The pasuk in Emor says that if you are Tameh at Erev, you can't partake in the Kodeshim, Maaser Sheni. If you go to the mikveh, then you can. That's clearly done by Maaser, not Shuma, not Kodeshim. I have a lav. What I don't have a lav for is if the Maaser Sheni is Tameh and you are Tor. Dichtiv, lo tuchal, and here now the Braita picks up again. We get back to the Braita, which is Dichtiv, lo tuchal, lechol bisharecha. It says you may not eat it. This is the pasuk that we've been quoting from Varim Yud Bet all along, which is lo tuchal, lechol bisharecha, masar degancha, vitiroshcha, vitzarecha, v'chorulot, v'karcha, v'tzonecha, chol nedarecha, shertidor, v'nidvatecha, v'tumat yadecha. So mentioned in that list is masar degancha, vitiroshcha, vitzarecha, which is referencing to Maaser Sheni, that you can't eat it bisharecha. You can't eat it at your homes. You have to bring it up. The next pasuk says, Kiim lefei Hashem Elokecha tochlenu. You have to eat it before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ula halanu omer. And further on it says, bisharecha tochlenu atamei vator. By bechor, it tells you that if you have a bechor that gets a mum in it, which is otherwise known as psulei hamukdashim, it can be true about a bechor. It can be true about other korbanot as well, if you redeem them. Bechor, it's true as soon as it gets a mum in it. Other kodeshim, if they get a mum in there, that takes away the kedushat haguf. If you redeem it, you'll be in the same position, which is what's called psulei hamukdashim. Psulei hamukdashim has certain requirements about how you utilize them. You can use them for their production, you can only eat them, and you can't throw them away to the dogs. You have to treat them with a certain amount of respect because they were once kodeshim, but they don't have the full dinim of kodeshim, and one of those things is hatamei vator. And Tamei and Tahor can eat them together. Tamei and Tahor can sit at the same table, eat the same Bechor, and it won't be a problem. Now, obviously, if a Tamei and Tahor are eating together, that means that, first of all, the Tamei, who has Tumat Guf, is eating the item. But as soon as he touches the Bechor, it's going to come Tamei. And that means that the Psulei HaMukdashim are now Tameim, and the Tahor is on the other side of the table, is going to be eating something that is Tamei. So that, according to the Torah, is fine. Psulei HaMukdashim have no problems with Tumat. And what the Gemara says is that there's a hekesh or a gzer shavu between the sharecha. The sharecha that is found by psulei hamukdashim, which says, A-OK for tuma and tahara, says, lo tuchal lechol bisharecha. The lav by Dvarim Yubet says, you may not eat it that way. Don't eat it like you eat the other sharim. The other sharim say, tamei and tahor yachdav. Over here it says, don't eat it that way. What does that mean? When you're tahor and the item is tamei, you cannot eat it when it comes to maaser sheni. And that's how we have the lav for Maaser Sheni, and here we have a lav in both directions. Now, Betanya, the Bei Rabbi Shmuel, Afilu Tamei B'Tahor Ochlim B'Karachat. When it comes to Psulei HaMukdashim, Tamei and Tahor can eat out of a single plate. Vein Choshashim, we don't worry about it. B'Kamar Rachmana, and now the Torah tells you, Hayach Tamei D'Shari Lach Gabei Tahor Hatam. That Tamei, or that Tuma, that I said a Tahor can eat over there, which means the Tamei touches the Bechor, and then the Tahor is eating that Tamei Bechor, that which I permitted to you over here, Hacha lo techol. Over here, don't eat it. That's lo tuchal lo echol bisharecha, which means that if you are Tahor and the Maaser Sheni is Tamei, you may not eat it. That comes from lo tuchal lo echol bisharecha. That's how the Gemara gets. Now we have a lav that applies to both of them, and you can get malkot for both of them. Then, umenale debar b'tiyahu. Our Mishnah implies that the reason you have a problem here is shalo nifdu. They were not redeemed. If you did redeem it, it sounds like it's okay. The Gemara wants to know, how do you know you can redeem Maaser Sheni that became Tameh? Dama Rabbi Lazar, minayin the Maaser Sheni shenitma shepodimoto. How do I know that Maaser Sheni that became Tameh, you can redeem it? Afilu biYerushalayim. Not only like Maaser Sheni Tahor that you can redeem outside of Yerushalayim, Maaser Sheni that's Tameh, you can even redeem it inside of Yerushalayim. Dama lomar, ki lo tuchal seito. The pasuk says that, kirbem imcha makom, if the place is too far away, lo tuchal seito, you can't carry it, it's too much for you to carry, kirichak mimcha makom, when it's too far away, v'tzarta kesef biyadecha, then you redeem it on money in order to bring it up to Yerushalayim. So that is written in the Pasuk, and it seems from the context of the Pasuk, Kilo Tuchal Seito means it's too heavy for you to carry, and that's what you redeem it. But Rabbi Lozer comes to give us a different perspective on that. The Ein Se'et El Achila. The word Se'et in the Torah many times means not a burden, but rather a meal. It means food that is given to a party. Something that is taken from usually the king and given as a portion to individuals. Shenamar, and that is what it says by Yosef, by Yisam Mas'ot Me Panach, that they took from him to distribute to the brothers, Mas'ot Me Panach, which is the meals or the food that he was granting them. So you see the word masa there doesn't mean a burden, it means food. And what you see from this is, ki lo tuchal seito, you cannot eat it. So what is the case where you can't eat maaser sheni? That's the case where it is tamei. And so what he learns from this is that there are actually two reasons you're allowed to redeem the maaser sheni. And that is, the pasuk says, b'chir ben mimcha makom, if it's too far away, ki tulu tuchal seito, because you cannot eat it, or it's too far away. For one of those two reasons, you have a right to redeem it. If it's too far away, you have a right to redeem it, even though you can eat it, which means that's only true outside of Yerushalayim, not true inside of Yerushalayim. Whereas the other requirement is if you can't eat it, you can redeem it. You can't eat it, it's irrelevant whether you're in or outside of Yerushalayim. It's because it's tamei, you can't eat it. The two of them together now you have is an O-O, which means that either or will allow you to redeem the item. Now, just take a little break, a station identification. Over here in Rashi, there's a little note there that Rashi passed away at this point, and his son-in-law, the Rivan, took over, and the papers for the remainder of Makot is his son-in-law, the Rivan. It's interesting, we know the other son-in-law of Rashi, much more famous, is Rabbeinu Meir. Rabbeinu Meir, because he's the father of the Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rivam. But he also had another son-in-law, the Rivan, who was also very famous. And here the Rivan, who is one of the very early Balei HaTosafot, the son-in-law of Rashi, now takes over the Peirush for Rashi through the remainder of the Masechta. I've already noted for you before that it's hard to even think that Rashi wrote the other parts of the Peirush on Makot. For example, we saw before that he quotes Yerushalmi. It almost never happens in Rashi, if it happens at all. Most likely it was not Rashi. And he quotes twice, Yerushalmi, which we never see in Rashi. And also on the 2 days ago's daf, he also had Rashi at the end of his parish say, Be'im Tomar. If you want to say that this is a problem, that's a much more Tosafot-like expression, not something that Rashi normally does. So that would be indicative that maybe even prior to this point, there wasn't Rashi. But here in the notes, here it mentions that at this point in time, Rashi passed away, Bitara, below Peresh Yoter, Mikam Elech, Shon Tamido, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Natan, his Tamid, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Natan, who happens to be also his son-in-law, the Rivan. So just take note of that, because we just crossed over that threshold in the Gemara in our explanations. So now following the Rivan. Amar Abibi, Amar Abiyasi, Minayin the Maisu Sheni Tahor, Shepodino to Afilo Psia Chat Chutz Lechoma. How do I know when it comes to Maisu Sheni that's Tahor, that even one step out of Yerushalayim, you're allowed to redeem it? So far we said that the permissions or the dispensations to redeem it are Maaser Sheni that's Tamei, or Kirchak Mimcha Makom, when it's too far away to bring it, then we tell you redeem it and bring it up. Now we're suggesting, which is Kirchak Mimcha Makom doesn't literally mean it's too far, just means you're outside of Yerushalayim. That's the proposition of Rabbi Amar Biasi, and he wants to prove that that's the case. Shneamar, Ki Tulo Tuchal Seito, because you cannot carry it. Hami Bayaleg, like the Rabbi Elozer. You already need that for Rabbi Elozer to teach you that when it's Tamei, you can redeem it. Over here, it makes it sound like go to Chal Seito, because you don't want to carry it, then you're allowed to redeem it. Doesn't matter how far away you are, it's just you can't carry it. Mar says you already needed that for the limud of Rabbi Elozer. Im kein lemakra lo tuchal lo ochlo. Just use the word ochel instead of the word Seito, and you would have learned Rabbi Elozer's din. My Seito. Seito comes to teach you two things. Not only is it that if you can't eat it, you can redeem it. If you don't want to take it, you also can redeem it. So let's say now that the Seito comes to teach you that if you don't want to carry it, you can redeem it. And it has nothing to do with Rabbi Elozer's limud. Im kein lemar kara lo tuchal litlo. Use a better verb for carrying, which is litlo. My Seito. What is the Seito? Why did the Torah use the ambiguous word Seito? Shma min atarte. It purposely used an ambiguous word because it wanted you to get both meanings of the word Seito. If you wanted to say achila, it could have said achila. If you wanted to say carrying, it could have said litol. Why did you say toh, which is ambiguous? To teach you both in him. That both when you can't eat it and you can't carry it, you can redeem it. Yotiv Rav Chanina, Rav Hoshaya, Vikami Bailuhu. And they had the following question. Now here there's some controversy about the Girsa. The first Girsa that we have in front of us is that Pitchat Yushalayim Mahu. We said the door at Yushalayim, what's the din? Here almost everybody wipes out this Girsa because it doesn't make sense. I mean, that's what Rav Bibi Amarasi just addressed. That when you're in the doorway to Yerushalayim, you're allowed to redeem it, so that doesn't seem to make sense that that's their question. So you have to either amend it in one of two ways. Either you eliminate it, which is becoming by lo, this is the question, and then you go to Pshita and you eliminate it entirely, or the other way to deal with it is, coming by lo, apitcha to Yerushalayim. It's not telling you what the question is, it's telling you where they asked the question. They asked the question when they were sitting at Pitcha to Yerushalayim, because the question revolved around Pitcha to Yerushalayim. So they were sitting there thinking about halachot that related to this. And that is the following. Pshita hu b'chutz u'masa'o b'fnim. If he carried up his ma'aser sheni to Yerushalayim, and he still is outside of the Yerushalayim, but his load already crossed over the threshold into Yerushalayim, koto mechitzot. Mechitzot of Yerushalayim already took it in, and now you can no longer redeem the ma'aser sheni. So it's clear to us that the ma'aser sheni went in first, and then him afterwards, that the ma'aser sheni is already in Yerushalayim. Who bitznim umasao b'chutz mao? The question is really from the other perspective. What happens if he has the ma'aser sheni on his back and he enters Yerushalayim, but the ma'aser sheni is still outside of Yerushalayim? Can he redeem it at this point? What determines whether he's crossed the threshold or not? Tanaluhu hausaba b'debei Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So one of the elders from the school of Beit Midrash, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, said over a braita. When the place is too far away from you, again, we read the pasuk a number of times, but it says twice the word mimcha. It says, b'chir b'irbe mimcha haderech, and then it says, kirechak mimcha hamakom. The usage of the word mimcha, it doesn't make so much sense. It should say, kirechak l'cha hamakom. What is mimcha? It implies something about you, means mimiluacha, means from any burden that you are carrying. As Rivan notes over here, there are two burdens that you're carrying up to Yerushalayim. That's yourself and the Ma'aser Sheni. And what is being implied over here is Mimi Luacha means that if any burden crosses over the threshold, that already makes it that you're inside of Yerushalayim. So irrespective of you being in Yerushalayim or the Ma'aser Sheni being in Yerushalayim, that's crossing the threshold. And that's because you basically become one unit. The Masa or the carry is carrying yourself and the load. And so together you are a single load. If you cross over the threshold, or the load crosses over the threshold, that makes it already that it's niklat ayidei Yerushalayim, and therefore it cannot be redeemed anymore. Bayra papa, nakit lebekanya mai. If he carried it on a stick, what is the din? I mean, if he's carrying like Johnny Appleseed, and he has it way off the back there on a stick, what's the din? The Gemara here leaves it at teiko. Similarly, the difference is that when he carries the load directly on his back, you can argue that he and the load are one unit. And in that case, his crossing the threshold or the fruits crossing the threshold are enough. When he already puts it on a stick, do we still view that as being one unit, him and the burden? Or do we say that that already separate him from the burden, and therefore you're considered to be two entities? And that's the question of the Gemara that they leave as a teiku. Am Rabbi Yassi, am Rabbi Yochanan. Ma'aser sheni, me'ematai chayavin alav. This is the same question that we began the Gemara today on, which is regards to Bikurim. Mei Matai, when do you become Chayav in Bikurim? Here the Gemara asks the same thing about Mei Matai Chayavin Alav for Ma'aser Sheni. What does it mean, Chayav Alav? That means that once it goes into Yerushalayim, it must be eaten inside of Yerushalayim. It means if you eat it outside of Yerushalayim, you're going to get Malkot. Implied in that, and we're going to see this in a second in the Gemara, is that before it reaches Yerushalayim, there wouldn't be Malkot. There might be an Isra Asay, which is the requirement to bring it up to Yerushalayim, but there are no Malkot. Malkot only start once it's entered Yerushalayim. Then you can't eat it outside of Yerushalayim. So now the Gemara answers, Mishara'a p'nei achoma. Once it sees the wall, again here I told you that there's an alternate girsa that's brought by the Balei Tosafot, which is Mishara'a p'nei abayit. And that might have to do with, again, correlating between Ma'aser Sheni and Bikurim. Do they have the same requirement? A different requirement? Or are these two synonymous? Mishara'a p'nei abayit and Mishara'a p'nei achoma basically are the same din. So over here we have Mishara'a p'nei achoma over here, which would mean that Ma'aser Sheni is determined by the wall, because that's what is important for Ma'aser Sheni. Bikurim are determined by Mishra'a p'nei abayit, because they have a process that needs to be done in the Mikdash, which is putting it by the Mizbeach. So maybe there the Mikdash is more significant for Bikurim, and maybe it's different. Alright, so now, Ma'aser Sheni, What's the reason? Amakra lifnei Hashem Elokecha tochlenu. That you eat it before a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Uchtiv lo tuchale chol bisharecha. That you have to bring it up to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It has to be eaten before Hashem. And lo tuchale chol bisharecha. And you may not eat it in your she'arim. So here we say, Kohecha de green and bay lifnei Hashem Elokecha tochlenu. When you have a right to eat it lifnei Hashem Elokecha, green and bay lo tuchale chol bisharecha. Then you can say about it that you may not eat it bisharecha. So there's a correlation between necessity to eat it in the right place and the law that says if you don't eat it there, that you're going to be in trouble. So remember in Dvarim Yudbet, it says, lo tuchal echol bisharecha, and lists off all the items including maisim sheni. And the subsequent pasuk, it says, ki im lifnei Hashem lokecha tochlenu, that you must eat it before Kodesh Baruch Hu. So here you have, one side of it is, you must eat it here in Yerushalayim, and the other one is, don't eat it outside of Yerushalayim. That correlation means that when you can eat it in Yerushalayim, that's when you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim. If you can't eat it inside of Yerushalayim, then there's no lav that is associated with it. Is that really true? Rabbi Yossi Omer. Kohen happened to pull out a teina that was of tevel, and he wants to eat this teina. Amar teina zu chumata buksa. The teina, the truma, is by the piece that attaches it to the tree. It's already detached. But he's saying by that area where the stem is, that's where the truma is. From this we learn, the Ribban points this out as well, that you have to specify particularly where the truma is, because you need what's called shi'areha nikarim. You have to know where the truma is and where the remainder is. You have to define between them. Maser rishon b'tzafona. The maser rishon is on the northern side of it. Maser sheni l'daroma. Maser sheni is on the southern side. Beish not Maaser Sheni, if it happens to be, it's the year in which Maaser Sheni needed to be given. Behu be Yerushalayim, and he's inside Yerushalayim. Now, implied in that is that if he was outside of Yerushalayim, the outcome would be different. Oh, the case is Maaser Ani. It is a year of Maaser Ani. Behu be Gvulin, and he's outside of Yerushalayim. Achla, if the Kohen eats it, lokeh achat, he gets one set of malkot. Vizar shachla, lokeh shtayim. The zar that eats it gets two sets of malkot. She'ilu b'tchila achla, because had he eaten it in the first place, enu leka elachat. He would only have gotten one set of malkot. Had he eaten it as tevel, he would have only gotten one set of malkot, which is the malkot for eating tevel. Tevel is elotase. We saw it in our Mishnah. You get malkot for eating tevel. Now that he did all this to separate out the trumot and masrot, he actually got himself into more trouble, and therefore he's loke achat for the kohen, and loke shtayim for a zar. Now, the Rivan explains to us, why is he loke achat? Because the lo tziyami de tevel b'kriyat shem zeh. He did not get rid of the problem of tevel with this kriya. B'ka'achal ma'aser rishon ha'tevel l'trumat maser. He did one thing that he didn't finish off with taking off all the trumot ha'masrot, which is that he took off trumat gdola, he took off ma'aser rishon, and he took off ma'aser sheni, or in the case where it was ma'aser ani, he took off ma'aser rishon and ma'aser ani. What he didn't do is from the ma'aser rishon, take off trumat maaser. That means that it's still tevel for trumat maaser. And that's where the kohen runs into a problem. Had he just delineated it and said, that maaser rishon that I took off, I segregate out the trumat maaser, a kohen can eat it. It's his. Trumah goes to the kohen. The trumat gdolah, trumat maaser was his. He just didn't do it. That's why he is in violation of one lav. The Yisrael is in violation of two lavin, because not only did he not separate out the trumat maser, but he also has a problem of the truma itself, which he's not allowed to eat, because for zarim, it's not mutar. So the zar has two problems. He has the problem of truma, and he has the problem of it not being mufrash. I mean, it's still tevel, the trumat maser. So that, the Gemara says, those are the lavin that you're in violation of. Had he just left it as tevel, you'd only been in violation of one lav. Now that he's separated all these items out, he ends up being in violation for a kohen in one lav, and for Yisrael in two lavin in that situation. So now Gemara says, Taimad ite b'Yerushalayim. The reason you only get one malkot for the kohen or two malkot for the Yisrael is because he was in Yerushalayim. Had he been outside, lokeh shalosh, you would have gotten three sets of malkot for the Yisrael, two for the kohen, because you're eating maaser sheni outside of Yerushalayim. Dav agav delo ra'a pnei achoma. So it's even a case that it didn't see the pnei achoma. So what you see here is that irrespective of whether it was brought up to Yerushalayim or not brought up to Yerushalayim, when you're in the Gvulin, you get malkot for eating maaser sheni out of Yerushalayim. Gemara answers, He took it into Yerushalayim and took it out. That would be the case. The case here, it's in Yerushalayim. Case where you'll get three sets of Malkos, case where he went up to Yerushalayim and then took it out again, not when he just eats it in the Gvulin. Mar says, Yochim Ma'ala Memra. What's the Chiddush then? Admit, if you say like me that it's telling you that you get three sets of Malkot in the Gvulin, not two, that's teaching the din that Meister Sheni gets Malkot outside of Yerushalayim, even if it was never brought up to Yerushalayim. That's a Chiddush. According to you that says it went into Yerushalayim and took it out, what's the Chiddush that he's eating in Yerushalayim? It gets two there and he would get three outside. Of course he'd get three outside. What's the question? He took it in when it was still Tevel. He took it into Yerushalayim before the Meister Sheni was segregated from him. And it comes to teach you that matnot that have yet to be taken off have a classification as if they are taken off. And for that reason now, you have a problem. It entered into Yerushalayim in a Tevel state. So technically, it should be that Yerushalayim was never collated. And if you take it out now and then take off the Meister Sheni somewhere else, it should be like as if it never saw Yerushalayim. The answer is, because it was Tevel, and we look at it as if each of those items is already designated or segregated, it's as if it went into Yerushalayim came out. And if you eat it outside of Yerushalayim now, you're going to get Malkot for it, despite the fact that it never technically saw Yerushalayim. It did see it through the Tevel, not through Meister Sheni. That's enough to make you Chayav in Malkot, and that's the Chiddush that's being brought over here. Okay, we're going to stop here, seven lines down on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.